Hey, this is Jose Galison on No Way Jose. This is on the you can find this on the No Way Jose YouTube channel. I'm also on just about everywhere podcasts are at, every podcatcher. Also on the Liberty Movement YouTube channel and BitChute as well. This episode will not be going up in there because the Liberty Movement is strictly for my political, cultural, or non-political cultural stuff. This one does not fit under that bill. I know if you guys are watching this, you saw the little intro I had that does say for non-political stuff, but you know, I've expanded my brand since then and Daniel Elwood did me a solid and I really like that intro. So whatever, just ignore that little bit. Today, my guest is Patrick McFarlane. We're going to be following up on something we did before. We did a 2020 review and being as we hit it off really good and had good rapport and kind of just went way longer than we thought, this has become a two-parter, which is ironic now because it's 2021, but hey, you know, that might add to the conversation. So before I get into it, I have a request for some of you like tech folks, go check out endthefed.app. Let me know what y'all think of it. This is something I might be getting into here soon. Maybe start promoting them. Let me know what you think. With that, I'm gonna go ahead and bring on Patrick and we're gonna fucking get into it and have fun. What's up, dude?
Hey, how's it going?
Hey. So thanks for coming on again. We had a blast last time. So let's get back into it. We left off on riots. Oh, you know what? Fuck, I'm being super unprofessional. You go ahead and give your intro to the people so they know who you're at. We'll do this all professional-like, and you can let them know who you are.
Oh, yeah.
Where you're at and shit.
I'm selling myself really highly here. Well, Patrick McFarlane here of the Liberty Weekly podcast. I'm a practicing personal injury attorney. I've been podcasting since my second year in law school. And I cover libertarian legal theory. I cover a whole bunch of stuff. So check it out, libertyweekly.net. And I'm really glad to be joining you to finish off this 2020 in review.
Yeah, no, it's fun. It's funny. It was quite a clusterfuck trying to reschedule. And you had stuff going on in your life. I had pretty crazy past few weeks. So just end up inevitably ending up in midway through, well, damn near almost over halfway through January. And yeah. Here we are. But hey, you know what? I feel like that might add something to it, especially some of the craziness that's going on. And that's kind of what I want to touch back on. One of the things we ended on before we went with riots. So I kind of want to touch back on that because I think there's a lot to be said about the whole riots thing. Because now there's this added component of what came into 2021 with the January 6th stuff with the Capitol building. And I don't know if you have any thoughts, and I'll let you go. I've probably said a lot here lately on my channel. I'm sure you have some choice words as well.
Yeah, I don't know if I've actually talked about it yet. And I think in some ways it's kind of funny that we're recording today because today is the 19th, the last full day of Donald Trump's presidency. And I'm sure that this episode is going to be out of date by this time tomorrow. If anything kicks off, which I tend to think that when I try not to form an opinion about the Capitol Hill situation. I usually try not to have a knee-jerk reaction because that's what I usually do. When I was less politically mature, I suppose. Not to say I am now, but I don't know. My first reaction was that it seemed very strange. I'm one who's always on the lookout for some kind of a false flag situation. And it seemed like it was a situation where things were let to happen, that security was much too lax in the situation. And I don't even think that that is a controversial view because even my mainstream, like liberal friends, they thought that it was let to happen too. It seems like that's kind of the consensus. So is that kind of what you think, Jose? Do you think something was fishy about it, you know?
That's kind of where I actually was the same way. It's funny because like whenever all this stuff popped off, all my like normie friends, they immediately were like, hey, what do you think of this? Because they all want to know my opinion. And I was just like, I don't know. And I'm still kind of an I don't know. I mean, I have like formed a little bit more opinions in time. But for the most part, yeah, I don't really have a strong opinion on it. Like, I mean, the biggest thing I got at was just the irony of the like, you know, everyone freaking out, you know, the cathedral throwing a fit. And it's like, you know, after months of BLM riots. But yeah, no, when it comes to like the false flag stuff, I'm very much like, I don't at all doubt that there could be some conspiracy or some sort of something like that. But I generally am the kind that I don't, until I have some sort of decent evidence, I generally just don't go there. Cause it's like, you kind of just come off with like a loon if you go there without having something. Like, yeah. I know there was that thing where like the video of like the police like opening up and it's like, I don't know. I mean, you could easily chalk it up to a lot of stuff. So it's like, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me in the least, in the slightest, in the absolute slightest, because this was, you know, if the cathedral, if you will, wanted to win, this is it, you know, like this is the best way to besmirch him. Like, you see what's come of it. And it's like, I mean, yeah.
Well, I think that was the best take that I had. And I can't even say it was an original take, because I think I heard Dave Smith say it. And then I was like, oh yeah, this is what I think.
Yeah. None of us have original thoughts around right here.
You know, I was like, oh yeah, well, I mean, I couldn't think of a better thing to have happened for the liberal establishment. Not just the liberal establishment, but the swamp, you know, the elite, the political elite. There seemed like there were some senators and congressmen who were going to object to the electoral vote count. And then everyone who was anyone dropped it immediately afterwards. And, you know, I think one big takeaway from this is that the mainstream political consensus, they don't operate on principles. Because if you know, on one moment over the summer, you can be condemning the riots, and then you're for riots and against police when it's your people who are storming the Capitol, or vice versa, when you are for riots all summer long, and then a much milder situation happens in a sacred holy temple, then all of a sudden everything flip-flops. So these people aren't grounded in any kind of actual principle.
Yeah, no, that's definitely the case. There's not really any principle to be had here. And that's, I mean, there was so much on both sides, really, between the, like, I brought up the fact that it's just ironic that, you know, they, everyone just like clutches their pearls about the, about this, but it's like, there were months of BLM riots, and it's like, and then the other side, you had literally, you know, people, there were literally people with like flags, blue line flags, attacking police. It's like, I don't know. It's just, for me, I guess I have just gotten to the point where I just sit back and enjoy the chaos. It's just kind of just fun in a sense. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, this is a perfect example of such. And it's, I mean, I don't really, there's not a whole lot to be had there. I mean, like I said, I haven't got like a deep thought on it. I mean, I've had a couple conversations where it kind of went into like political violence and like if it's merited. And like, I mean, my position, I don't know if you have, I mean, some people might think I'm being a grifter here, but I am of the opinion, morally speaking, for the most part, political violence is almost always morally permissible. It's just a matter of, is it tactically smart? And almost never is it tactically smart. It's all, like, for me, it's like 99%+ of the time, it's morally permissible for political violence, depending on, I guess. I mean, there's within reason, like, you know, if you're attacking the establishment. But almost the same percentage of the time, it's retarded.
Like, right.
It's not going to work out in your favor. And so you're just shooting yourself in the foot. And that's, and yeah, because I just thought it was funny how many people were clutching pearls with all this. And it's like, oh my, look at them. It's like, yeah, but at least in a sense, they're attacking the problem. But it's like, I don't think this is smart in any way. I mean, at least not for them. For me, I mean, looking at it from the bigger picture, I think it may actually work out for like people like me and you in the long run. But like, for like, if I was a conservative, this would be the last thing I'd want to do. You know, it's pretty goddamn dumb.
I didn't know how people were pearl clutching, because in a way it's, this nation was founded on the idea that if a government is unjust, the people have a right to overthrow it and install a new one. Think about that a little bit. But you know, theoretically they have a chance to overthrow it and install a new one. What do you think that looks like? I mean, we live in such a privileged time that we are so used to our creature comforts, myself included, that we don't know what it would actually be like to roll up your sleeves or to give your life for something greater than yourself or your children, a better situation for your children. But I don't know. I think that what you should have done, one or two things. Tactically, is it smart? No, to do this. If you're going to do it though, you either do it or you either come strapped in a way and really overtake the Capitol and start holding like hearings, commissions or firing senators or doing something, or you go in and do a peaceful protest and sit in and show the world that we're dignified, civilized people. And we're not going to, you know, have some kind of 1953 coup or Iran, you know, Iranian coup or anything. We're just going to come in here, do the Rosa Parks thing and look really good on national television, or, you know, keep our hands as clean as we can. But not that I endorse going in and you know, shooting up the Capitol or anything like that. But it seems like if you're going to be a radical revolutionary and storm the Capitol, either do it, you know, one of those two ways.
Yeah, you got to commit. It was like no commitment. And don't get wrong, me being like a kind of like a shit poster kind of guy, like for me, I thought it was hilarious. Like,
oh yeah, the guy.
I mean, it's awesome. It's just great content. But for like a from a, you know, your normie looking in, or like, you know, your generic like beltway person, it's like, oh my. And it's like, you didn't really accomplish anything. I mean, for me, I fucking love it. This is great entertainment. Like, there's so many memes came out of this. You dude, got his feet propped up on Pelosi's desk. Like, I mean, if anything, I kind of like wish they went a little bit further in the like troublemaking type thing.
Right.
I mean, but yeah, I don't know. It was definitely grade A content, but I don't really know what to make of it aside from that. But yeah, it was just like, if they had committed, like, yeah, if like if they'd done a sit in, or if they had, you know, gone full on, like, you know, but
like, then, well, like they're thinking it's going to happen at the inauguration tomorrow.
Yeah. That is really weird. I just don't know. I don't know what to make of that yet. I this is another situation which I'm like, don't really have any opinions on yet. Cause it is like, part of me is like, are they just like staging a like thing here? Or are they just like staging a perfect scenario with if anything does happen, they can immediately be like, oh, see, and they can make this whole big thing. But I mean, me being like, I mean, I feel like I kind of have my ear to the ground to these, you know, conservative or libertarian boogaloo types. And it's like, I don't really feel like there's anyone who's out there who's like, yeah, let's go fucking, you know, stop the inauguration. It's like, I haven't seen that anywhere. And it's just, if anything, I think most people caved after the Capitol thing. That's like the energy I've gotten, you know? So it's like, I just don't get it.
That's why it was a master stroke by the establishment in 4D chess. You know, I think 4D chess is it's a term that's overused, but I really do think these people, not that there's one monolithic organization that's pulling the strings behind the scenes, but I really do think that they're smarter than we give them credit for. Mm-hmm. But that's taking for granted that there is someone orchestrating things, and that our brains want to think that way because that would make a very complex and ununderstandable world understandable for our brains. I don't know, man. I think it was just really what I thought is that wouldn't it just be the perfect setup if we're transitioning into the new domestic war on terror? I think that after 9/11, it was the international war on terror. Now the panopticon is turned inward. The evil eye of Sauron is turned inward. And it would be a perfect kickoff to that situation to have something go down tomorrow. Have it look like a bunch of 2A boog type people have organized a revolution. And that would be the perfect pretense to take away everyone's guns and to kick off, you know, finally eliminate that segment of the population that would dare vote for Donald Trump.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think there's a lot I can touch on there. Cause like you did kind of bring on like, is there a master hand behind it? And I feel like a lot of times we're too binary in our thinking, especially of people of our kind. Like we're too often very black and white. And like, so we're all like, it's always like, for example, the Beltway libertarians are always like the government is incompetent. And then you have some people who immediately just assume, you know, especially maybe like the Alex Jones types, that government is evil. But it's like, it's almost like a mix of the two. It's not one or the other. And like, even with that, it's like, even with there being evil, because I do think there are probably people who do control things from behind the scenes, but I don't think they're as powerful as they let on. And I think, I don't know, for example, like, I mean, I'm probably going to touch on, I probably might do a censorship episode this week, but like, you look at like the stuff that's going on with like some of the censorship going on, and if anything, they're just kind of, they do try to clamp down and be like, hey, you can't do this here, but then all they do is just then redirect the energy to other places. So it's like, I do think it's one of those things where people try to have this central planning. I think to some extent it does work, but in the end, it kind of just, I mean, I don't know. I guess that ties a lot too, where I'm like an agorist. So it's kind of like drives things to the agora. It just drives things underground, which, I mean, that's another, like, that's a whole other thing too, where you can go into like how all this censorship of conservatives is going to backfire. You know, I don't know if we talked. I don't think we did touch on this, but I do think there, with this, all this crazy shit going on is going to, I mean, you look at what 8 years of Obama did and it gave us Trump. Like, what is 4 to 8 years of Biden or Harris going to do? And after showing, after directly showing to conservatives that, hey, the political route doesn't work. And on top of that, they did all the shit they did under Obama, but did it like 10 times worse. Because a lot of the stuff that we're seeing now, like the censorship and stuff, is like kind of a lot of the same stuff we were seeing around that era, but way cranked up. So, like, what are we going to get? And I know a lot of people just think, like, oh, you know, the powers that be are just going to control shit. And it's like, that's not necessarily how things work. Sometimes people, like, I think they overvalue the strength of the state. Or you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm actually, so I'm like a real doomer sometimes. People who have listened to my show the whole time, I've always been a pessimist, kind of a doomer, but this is my white pill. Is I thought about writing a Substack article about this. Check me out, libertyweekly.net/Substack. You can get me there. But I'm really excited right now. I'm really excited because I have never seen these alternative platforms be as viable as they are right now. And I was on BitChute months after it first started. I was on MeWe in 2018, March 2018. Not at the ground level, but things are really, I mean, things are getting user-friendly. Things are getting fun to use. There's enough people moving to these platforms to make it fun. Not only that, but it's like, okay, well, networks like Float. Every single fucking person that's on Float is a libertarian anarchist, pretty much. And so for content creators like me, it's like, oh, well, I can get in at the ground level with these things and really make something of myself and connect with a very targeted demographic of people who I know are receptive to this message. I'm not that worried about echo chambers or anything, because I think we were already self-segregating. So I don't know if you worry about that.
No, I mean, I don't know, especially like with our group of people, like, where we come from, I don't feel like we kind of, in a sense, have an echo chamber, but being as we're kind of like the outcasts, it's kind of like, yeah, we do have an echo chamber, but that's like our only little, like one little spot, but the rest of our lives, like the 95% of the rest of our lives is not an echo chamber. And we kind of have to get used to existing in, you know, if anything, it's really like the left and the right that have the echo chambers. It's like, yeah. 'Cause they're not used to. Especially like when I was in high school, I was in rural Tennessee. So like, if I still lived there, in like, I probably would be in a complete echo chamber of like Fox News conservative type stuff. And so, yeah, that would be a legit echo chamber. But for me, being a fucking ANCAP, agorist, whatever, what have you, like just existing anywhere, like no matter whether I was in rural Tennessee or whether I was in, you know, like Sam in the kind of sort of Florida area, but say I lived in like the city of Tampa, like I still would like have to, you know, I mean, I like normal people I interact with are not going to be me. So like, I have to learn how to operate in those areas. So there's, I don't know. We don't really have a echo chamber. So, I mean, I don't know. The whole echo chamber thing is kind of, and I feel like people of our ilk kind of generally try to expose themselves to different ideas. I mean, that's the only reason I even got here in the first place, you know?
Yeah. So I think you're right.
Yeah.
It's not everyone that's going to become a libertarian anarchist in this time. You have to be receptive to entertaining new ideas. And at this point, I remember when I first got into libertarianism and started calling myself an anarchist, I looked all over the internet for counter arguments, because I was like, you know, I really want to see both sides of this, you know. But you don't get anything aside from people being like, oh, Austrian economics is heterodox. It's just BS and whatever. You know, it's not empirical.
So. Yeah, or it's like silly shit. Like, but who would build the roads? And right. Then you go on it doesn't even take long to be like, oh, here's one way. Here's another way. Here's, you know.
Oh, you mean private highways exist all over the place in Sweden and France right now?
I did kind of want to touch on too that you brought up the whole like I mean, I don't want to blow my wad because I saw him doing a censorship episode. But you brought up the alternate, you know, socials. I'm kind of glad I jumped on early because I was seeing this going on, especially before the election. That's probably when I started really jumping on the other socials. But I am seeing these things gaining traction, and like, while it's kind of annoying, like for example, like we were talking before how like my YouTube views have lately just gone like plummeted, and it's like, I mean, maybe I just suck and people don't like me anymore. I don't know, but like. It's also like, but then I compare it to my BitChute views or my like podcast views that go out to all different, you know, platforms. It's like my audio podcast, it's like, I don't know, it doesn't really add up. Whereas when I first started out, like I got way more. So I don't know if they have some sort of algorithm going on, The point being, like, the more they clamp down on these, like, mainstream ones, you know, thinking they're going to, like, stop the chatter, all they're doing is pushing that, I mean, to bring up the echo chamber again, all they're doing is pushing us out of their echo chamber, in a sense. And, like, while it is annoying for, like, me and you to some extent, it is also, like, yes, maybe I may not be getting as much views as I would if I was on YouTube, but it's, like, the views I'm getting are people who are probably actually more prone to my message or, you know, like, more loyal listeners. Because, like, if somebody I listen that listens to me on BitChute is going to be generally probably better than someone who listens to me on YouTube, you know, generally speaking. So, and yeah, getting in on the ground floor, like, I'm on Float as well. Like, it's like, it was annoying going out with all these different ones at first. It's kind of clunky, but they've kind of been getting a little bit better as time goes on, as I get more followers. Not even that I have a lot. I'm still very much on the ground floor, but I am, like, seeing this go forward, and I can, but yeah, my point is kind of getting at before, like, that's kind of the error in central planning. And it's just like, they overvalue, you know, how much on their shit they are than when they're really not. And, you know, all they do is drive people to, in a sense, the Agora, you know, to bring it back into, like, agorism, because that's kind of, in a sense, kind of what that is. They're just driving it underground, you know?
So, that's exemplified in us being here speaking together too, is because I don't talk about this with people in my daily life, you know, my normie life. I try to drop little things to, like, if someone is complaining about the government, I lay it on really subtly. But here, you know, daily life being so cathedrally and mainstream has driven us to form this community online, you know, with a whole bunch of other people, and seek everyone else out. Another point on these alternative platforms is that it really feels like the wild, wild west. And I was too young to, I remember the early days of YouTube back in mid 2000s. Now I'm 27 years old and it feels like that again, or at least
people, my bad. I don't know why I always thought you were older than me. My bad.
Yeah. It's the gray. I got gray hair in law school. Yeah. I just had this discussion with my uncle. God. Yeah. But so it just feels like the Wild West, and that's really exciting. It's just, there's this energy about it. And in some ways, I want to be white-pilled on this, but in some ways, I think we're living through a libertarian golden age right now. I mean, in the 60s, the number of libertarians that were really ANCAPs were like 10 people in a room with Murray Rothbard, you know? And now there's hundreds of thousands of us, most likely. But to your point too, what we're looking for is to meet less people, reach less people. Jeff Dice said this on the Human Action podcast. He said we want to reach maybe less people, but engage them on a very deep level. And I think that's what we have with these alternative platforms.
Yeah. And I mean, like, I don't know. I mean, different strokes for different folks. I'm all for bringing people in. But at the same time, I think, I mean, this kind of goes into, I mean, I'm not very much on politics, but I know they talk about a lot when it comes to, like, the LP. Like, if we're going to, I mean, I'm an agorist, so I'm kind of anti-politics, and that's a whole other separate conversation. But if you were going to, if that is a tenable, you know, tactic, you need to be on message. And a lot of people be like, oh, you need to be able to tamper your message to cater to, you know, the normies. But I actually think you're better off, like, just being strong with your messaging. And, like, it'll kind of bring, I think, naturally just bring people in by being bold. I think it's Angie McArdle. I heard her recently say some shit where she was like, you know, when you try to tamper your message, you just end up, like, you know, appealing to no one, essentially, like, not even the normies. At least when you're being bold, it's kind of like, oh, like, yeah, like, oh my God, like, well, they're saying we should have no government, but it's like, at least it gets them thinking, you know?
Yeah. Look at Ron Paul, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah. And I guess you could argue that maybe a lot of the people that followed Ron Paul were just transients politically, that they would, you know, they turned into Bernie bros, or they weren't principled, but they were listening to Ron Paul, you know. And if Ron Paul had succeeded, if he had more staying power in that moment, who knows?
Yeah, but he was non-compromising, and you hear people from all across the aisle will, like, you know, speak of his name with reverence. It's only, like, the neocons or the neoliberals that really will shit on his name. Like, you can hear a Bernie bro, like, you brought up Bernie bros, they will speak of, you know, Ron Paul with reverence. They, you know, like, like, they don't agree with a lot of his message, but they're like, you know, motherfucker was bold. He was principled. Like, I mean, it's kind of like, for me, like, that's how kind of how I felt about Bernie before he caved to Hillary. He kind of was very much and had been for decades principled to his message. I think his principles were dumb, but at least it's like, okay, I can respect that. You know, like, I mean, after he caved to Hillary, I was kind of like, oh no, he's caving into being, you know, just one of the elite kind of deal. But
my biggest knock against Bernie, I'm going to direct everyone to a vintage Liberty Weekly episode. It's libertyweekly.net/15. It's titled Jane and Bernie Sanders in the Big Burlington Heist. So much fun with this one.
Was that the one where his wife like had some sort of like, I don't remember all the details, but she was like somehow extorting money or some shit. I don't remember how.
So I have a whole bunch of news stories and links there. I did this investigative reporting episode on Jane Sanders taking over this Burlington College and basically sucking it dry like a vampire and hiring her own daughter for this like multi-$100,000 pottery program. That just basically was just a money siphon.
Yeah. No, that's funny. Yeah, I was probably around that time becoming more politically aware. So it was like, that's why I had that impression of he was.
I'm not trying to knock you. I'm sorry. You're good.
I know you weren't knocking me, but it was like one of those things I've been paying more attention. But when he came on the scenes, he had like decades of like being like the principled, you know, not even running as a Democrat, you know? But
yeah.
Yep. I had already started the trend of caving to the establishment. You know, he was like, I'm going to play within the game, which, to be fair, I understand how that works, because you have people. I mean, that's kind of one, not to go too deep into like why I'm against politics, but it's kind of like, that's why it doesn't really work, because they will shun you out of every political thing whatsoever. And that's why, as he was running for independent for like ever, he wasn't able to make any sort of traction. The only time he was able to make some sort of traction was once he gave up principles. And ironically, then he kind of loses traction. Mm-hmm. So it's just this losing game, no matter how you cut it. So, yeah. Once again, we're doing the same shit we did last time, where we spend like forever. And I love it, but I'm trying not to do a third part, because we won't do it until the end of the year. But let's move on. Ironically, here's another topic that impeachment. That was going to be the next topic I want to bring up. But I was talking about the first impeachment. And now, you know, now there's another one. So, which is fucking bizarre, but I'll let you riff and go on that. What do you think of? Let's start with the first impeachment. I mean, if you want to tie it into the one going on now, I mean, there's obviously parallels to be had. I do think it's really interesting how the first one got dragged on for forever, because it was obviously like a political dream for the elite, you know, and now they're just trying to get it through quick as fuck. So it's like, we had one that lasted for months, and now we have one that lasted less than a week.
Yeah. I think it's a marvel of their damage control. And I think that this is not to see things in black and white ways, but this again goes into the master 4D chess that I think the political elite are good at, this strategizing. And it was amazing how this whole Hunter Biden and Biden corruption thing just got sucked into the memory hole by a non-story with Donald Trump, how they could turn this very benign conversation that he had with the Ukrainian prosecutor, or was it the Ukrainian, their dignitary or whatever. He rightfully, and I'm not, you always have to freaking qualify things by saying, well, I'm not a Trump supporter, but I'm going to defend him here. But you could see that asking a foreign leader or a foreign country to investigate true corruption at the highest levels of your own political office, how that wouldn't be treasonous or anything like that. No quid pro quo, just a basic nothing burger, like the whole Russian investigation scandal before it. But
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I thought you were pausing there.
Oh, no. But basically what they did, I mean, the root of the story was there's something really fishy going on with Joe Biden for years and years and his son Hunter. And they took that somehow and swept it under the memory hole and now made it into a Trump impeachment situation. How the hell did they do that?
Oh yeah, that one blew my mind because it was like the whole time it was just, and it's funny too because I have like semi-normie friends, and if anything, like probably the people that I'm surrounded by are generally like more rightish, but then I do have like ones who are like centrist lefts. That's kind of like where the, you know, the range of people that I kind of like interact with usually, and even then they're kind of like a lot of them, I don't know, especially the center left ones. My right friends didn't, but my center left ones like just like we're like, yeah, that's not okay, like to the Trump stuff, and it's like, I just don't get how you could like not see what happened with the whole Biden thing and not be like, what is going on here? Because yeah, he straight up blatantly did quid pro quo, you know, but like, I don't know, it really was a whole, like you said, a whole nothing burger. And it was just like, for me, it was just more like tedious for months to be like, have friends that were like, oh, what about this latest thing? I'm like, no, this is this, that, and this, this is fucking dumb. And for them being a normie, they're just like, there's no way the establishment make this big a deal out of nothing. It's like, yeah, they fucking would. You know?
Who builds? Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think part of the problem with everything is, of course, how the media has gotten control of everything and how the media lines up under one viewpoint and just pushes that. But people don't, I realize this, is that people do not actually read and investigate facts for themselves. What they do is they get it through playing telephone tag by looking at all these different media outlets that, like, to make an analogy, they chew up the burger and spit it in their mouth, in the reader's mouth. So if the burger is the real facts of what happened, the media chews the burger up and spits it into the open mouths of all the readers. And that's what happens. I mean, Trump never, I hate to be defending him, but he never said anything close to incitement. Like Dave Smith says, incitement has a legal definition. Of course, I would go that conspiracy has a legal definition. Incitement has a legal definition. There are elements that have to be met. You know what doesn't have a legal definition? Quid pro quo.
Yeah.
Just a phrase they made up. Well, yeah. Yeah.
Which, especially when you're talking about political, it's like, that is what politics is. Like, what, I don't, this means this is a nothingness. And like, I'd have like friends who are like, can you believe he asked for something in return for something from a foreign leader? And it's like, what the fuck do you think leaders of nations do? You know, political leaders or whatever. That's literally all they do. Like, I just don't even know how to talk to you about this. Like, I don't know.
That goes into foreign policy too, where if you negotiate with anyone who's a bad leader, like, oh, heaven forbid you break bread with Assad and you talk about how you could de-escalate violence. Yeah. Well, you're Hitler then. I mean, would you talk to Hitler? You wouldn't talk to Hitler. You kill Hitler. You don't talk to him.
Which is honestly a stroke of genius from the establishment, because it's really a way to have your cake and eat it too, because you can do it to anyone. So it's like anyone that they decide, because they could just tomorrow decide we don't like Turkey, and then they can just point to atrocities. I mean, really, you could do it with America.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, easily. I mean, but yeah, and I kind of want to touch on too how it is funny how anytime we bring up like Trump, it is like we have to like caveat that it's like, you know, we're not Trump fans. And it's like, and it is like irritating. That's like one of the most annoying things about the past like 4 years is I have had to be like, I almost feel like I'm a Trump supporter to all my generic friends, especially like my friends that are from the right. I'm like, I'm not on your team. Like, I'm just not. And like I have to remind them, like, if it was up to me, he would be swinging from a tree in the White House lawn for the shit he's done. Go ahead.
I remember the day after the election, I was so in 2016, I was in law school. I can't remember. I think that was my second year. And I stayed up all night. I watched his announcement speech, just dumbfounded like everyone else. It was a situation. It was like an impasse. I couldn't imagine Trump winning and I couldn't imagine Hillary winning, but I knew one of them had to win. And I was so giddy because it was such a big fuck you to everybody. That's what everyone voted for. And I couldn't wait to get to school the next day. And when I got to school, within the first 3 minutes, we were talking at the library desk. And one of these law students, who was obviously liberal, came up and just started pissing and moaning about Trump and the deplorables and everything. And I was, that giddiness turned to like, oh shit, this is what the next 4 years is going to be like.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
You're being with them, where it's like, no, I just like to be like, fuck you. Yeah. Because it is like, I mean, there's something about Trump that he is like, while he's been completely ineffectual, he has been a big middle finger to the establishment.
Yeah.
In some ways. I mean, I guess if you go deep conspiracy, and you know, a lot of people think he's just controlled opposition, which I don't know, maybe he is, but I'm not privy to that information. So I just go off what I'm given. And from my perspective, he's just a big F you to the state.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's move on to, let's talk about the election. Let's talk about the campaign trail. One of the big things I want to talk about is I feel like a big part of the year was all the Biden gaffes that just got completely covered up by the fucking media. So I don't know if you got something to add.
You know, and they must have him on some really good uppers, because in that first televised debate, there was only one, wasn't there? There was just one.
I feel like it was two, but I don't remember.
Yeah,
I remember being super excited and being very let down when there wasn't any good gaffes.
Yeah, I was dumbfounded by how he could actually get up on a stage and talk. They must have done something, or have you seen there's pictures of older Biden where he has attached earlobes. You know, this thing where your earlobes, they can either be attached or detached, and it's a genetic thing. There's a picture of Biden from like the 90s where his earlobes are attached, or they're either attached or detached. And there's a picture of him from nowadays where they're the opposite. And that's physically impossible, unless, I don't think it's even possible if you had a plastic surgeon do it. So I don't know. It's nothing. Yeah, but
the reptilian skin suit.
Exactly. Yeah. So all conspiracy theorizing aside, I was just amazed. And the other thing was how people didn't know that about this Biden scandal. As it was going on during the debates, Trump, I was amazed too, because Trump got on and he started talking about the Hunter Biden situation, and no one knew what he was talking about. And if they knew about it, it was some kind of a Rudy Giuliani swamp creature thing.
Yeah, it was interesting how they just like, I feel like they knew, but I feel like, I mean, I guess your normie didn't know, but like the people, like the ones moderating the debates and stuff obviously knew, but they just acted like they're like, because I feel like they probably just knew your normies didn't know what was going on. And yeah, I mean, I don't know. It was something else. Yeah, I was definitely like, I was so excited for that first debate, because I was just like, I had been having so much of a blast just catching the little like bits of like Biden gaffes here and there. It was just so much fun. And like I guess it's fun. As it went on, it kind of got a little more depressing, because as much as I'm like, this is a horrible, despicable human being, it's still kind of like, is there no decorum? Why are we like trotting out this fucking, like, you know, someone who's obviously having mental health issues in his elderly years, and we're just like putting him in front of crowds and be like, go at it. And he's just like, I just like, it just felt like cruel, even though it's like, I guess that's like, I shouldn't feel bad for him, because it's like the amount of people's lives he's destroyed. Yeah. But it's still like, it's not even like he's not even really the same person in a way, because there's been moments where you can see that there's not a whole lot going on up in there. So it's like, he's almost not even the same person. He's just like a shell of a human being with like a failing brain, you know, like I don't even know how to put it that way. I mean, it's weird, because then you do have other times where he does seem like prescient and there, and like, I don't know, maybe that is just the reptilian, you know, under the skin suit, but I don't know. Yeah. It did become like, almost like I felt bad towards the end, but yeah, I was definitely very excited for that first one, and it didn't pay off. I was like, what the fuck do they have him on?
I was too. Like, I bought a case of beer and we made popcorn. And I just remember, I don't know, my wife was there. We had just put our son down and we were watching. And I guess like at some points where Trump addressed the points I wanted him to, I got excited. But at the same time, it was so depressing, because the other shit he said and just how awful Biden was the whole time. Like, I wanted Trump to come out more anti-lockdown and more definitively say, like, he did, you know, he did kind of say that, but there was no knockout punch, and I wanted one really bad.
Yeah, he never was principled. That's a big thing with Trump. It's if he had been, like, even semi-principled, that would have been a million times better, but he didn't stick with anything. And that was one of the big things where I felt like, I guess I felt like there was a, like a slip in his footing is when he did like, because he did like at one point, I don't remember exactly what it was, but at one point he did cave a little bit to the whole lockdown hysteria shit.
Right, yeah.
Like, I don't remember exactly what it was, but I remember that very moment I was like, all right, fuck.
All yeah, right. I remember he caved something.
Because you obfuscate your point. Because I was like, if he's going to be running for president, like that needs to be his thing. You don't need to be running from this like, well, we should only lock down certain spots and not here, and we need to reopen. But you need to have like a firm stance. And he never really had that. I mean, he did initially, but then he caved. And yeah, and also with the debates, he just like was like, I don't feel like he really hit Biden. He just like kind of did a little bit. I mean, but then when he did, it kind of came off as petty. And like, whereas Biden was like, I don't know, it was just, yeah, it was definitely a letdown. I was like looking forward to like Trump just fucking railing him, and then, you know, Biden, you know, just being a doddering old fool, and it just didn't work out that way at all. You know,
I wanted like a repeat of Trump Hillary 2016.
One yeah. Sorry. Go ahead.
Oh no. What are those debates? I think the one way that Trump really shot himself in the foot was endorsing the vaccine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like, he just doesn't know where to stand on things at all. Cause it's like, he's not in touch with his base either, because even your generic conservative is, even with him being pushing for it, is not about it, you know? Like, yeah. I don't know. I mean, I say that, but then again, I guess I do kind of know some generic conservatives who are, but yeah.
Hey, everybody. I hope you're enjoying this episode. This is the time of the show where I tell you how you can help support this content. Check out my Substack page, libertyweekly.net/Substack. Everything will be /. With Liberty Weekly in front. I published that article I talked about earlier in this episode about my grandpa and about the dawn of the new libertarian and agorist internet, and it got a lot of good traction. A lot of people have been signing up to the Substack, so go check that out. I'd really appreciate it. /Substack/Patreon or Subscribestar will get you bonuses. $5 a month will get you access actually to the next episode I'm live streaming recording tonight, Saturday, the 23rd of January at 7:30 with the Clean Libertarian talking about the drug war. $10 per month and you can join me on my B-side podcast. $15 per month, you get all the above and one redeemable topic on the Liberty Weekly podcast. And $20 per month, you can join me one time a year on the Liberty Weekly podcast. So go check out those bonuses. I forgot, $3 a month will get you just the audio and show extras and early access to the audio. Also, you can support for crypto. Go to /Cointree, COINTREE, and you can send me crypto with a personal note. Library.tv/LBRY. It's the new YouTube. You should be watching me there. You can give LBC. On /float, you can get all the Patreon and Subscribestar bonuses for crypto per month, reoccurring payments there. There's no new subscribers to shout out this week, unfortunately, and there's also no new reviews. But if you subscribe, I give you a shout out in the show in this portion. Or if you write me a review on iTunes and let me know, I will read it here, usually at this portion of the show. So those are all the ways that you can support me. Otherwise, for crypto, I've been /support. libertyweekly.net/support. You can find all those links right there, one-stop shop. You'll also find just crypto addresses there if you'd like to give that way. So non-monetary ways to support the show is just to share it, recommend it to your friends, give me a rating and review. I really appreciate it. So thanks for listening, everyone. We'll catch you next time.
Let's move on to, we kind of touched on earlier, I missed a good opportunity for a transition, but fuck it, I'm not that professional. let's talk about Hunter Biden and, you know, all the craziness that was going on there, because that's a story in and of itself. And I also do want to touch on how we think this will play going forward, because I think that this will be possibly a club the Republicans use against Biden. And I think that might be interesting, you know?
That's a fair point. I didn't think about it that way.
Because this was a thought I had before the election was going, because I knew the Hunter Biden stuff was going on. What I assumed was going to happen if Trump got elected, it was just going to get forgotten. And it was going to be kind of like the whole Hillary thing, lock her up. But I also thought, but if Biden gets elected, this is going to be what the Republicans use as a club against him. You know what I mean?
I think you're right. I also think that from the other perspective, and I don't think this is an idea that's original to me either, but it seems like the thing with Biden is that Biden is controllable. They have dirt on him, not just the Republicans, but the people who are really in control aren't the people that you see in front of you. You might hear about them sometimes. I don't even know if it's you know, the boogeymen that we hear about all the time, like Bill Gates, although I think he's a lot to do with it, but George Soros and the Rothschilds and all these people, there might even be a level behind them too. But I think a quality of it, if you watch, are you familiar with Mark Passio at all? I think I brought him up in our last episode.
I meant to look into it. That name is one I've heard a million times, and I know the name. I just can't put a face to it. Like,
did I tell you that he was a bishop in the Church of Satan, or he was like a high priest? Well, he says that's how, that the Church of Satan is a feeder, or one of the feeder organizations for this dark occult power elite that controls most of politics. But, and he said he saw it with his own eyes. But the thing about it is that they get each other together, and that's kind of what Bohemian Grove is that they'll do terrible kind of sadistic acts on victims, and that's how they compromise someone else so that they can control them. It's like a bond in this. I'm sure your listeners, you know, either they're completely blown away and think very little of me right now, or they know exactly what I'm talking about.
Oh, it's legit shit. I was actually just giggling because for some reason it brought to mind, like, it was a recent interview with Alex Jones where he was talking about it, and he was talking about, like, and then you have a senator's son who's fucking a dude in the ass.
Yeah.
But I mean, that was legit. Either
Tim Pool or Joe Rogan just with Tim Dillon.
Yeah, I think it was that one. It was
I was hunting. I was in my tree stand when I was listening to that, and no wonder I didn't see anything because I kept laughing.
Yeah, I wish I could read the line. It was fucking great. It was like, yeah, he's the senator's fucking dude in the ass, and they're like, all right, you can be president now.
So, I don't want to, I guess, do I want to assume that our audience knows what the Hunter Biden scandal is? I mean, basically that he was the funneling money through the Burisma board, which is a Ukrainian natural gas company, selling access to his father for money that he got through his salary on this board of the natural gas company. I think basically that's it, right? And yeah. There was a laptop that he, in some kind of crack-induced stupor, left at a laptop repair shop. And there's a statute whereby, in, you know, if someone doesn't pay their bill for the labor you've done, you can reclaim and get a lien on their property and you can sell it. Well, the computer owner did that after it was sitting there for a while and ended up turning it into Rudy Giuliani.
Yeah.
But the emails were confirmed by its recipients and this Tony Bobulinski guy.
Yeah, so, I didn't mean to cut you off. But, you know, pretty much the mainstream media and even the Biden campaign never really denied it. They would always just, like, find, like, I don't remember, like, how do I put it? They would obfuscate, basically. But no one ever straight up said, aside from, I mean, like, just generic people on the internet that would say stuff like, oh, that probably isn't his laptop. But, like, people, like, you know, the mainstream people, the ones who, like, know this is something could come back to bite me if I'm, like, on the record saying, you know, complete bullshit, you know, on this at least, they were pretty much never straight up say it wasn't his. It was confirmed to the nth degree. It had multiple people who were he had emailed, like email recipients that he'd emailed who then confirmed. It had been confirmed to the nth degree, but it was just a matter of, like, I don't know, people play this whole game of just, like, it was just obfuscation is all it was. Yeah. It was, you might as well just take it as fact. And it's also a matter of, like, we don't know all that was on there. It was heavily implied by some of the more conspiracy-minded individuals, so take that with a grain of salt, that maybe there was some, like, weird, like, kiddie porn slash shit like that, which, I mean, I'm not putting it past any of those fucking sickos, especially, like, someone tied to Biden, but, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it could be not a thing. I don't know. But, yeah, if anything, it could be one of those things where they brought that into the mix to make it seem less, like, less believable, you know? But at the end of the day, the crux of it, aside from all that shit, was, yeah, that they were selling access. And, like, it was this generic thing where, like, he was working for some other foreign nation's company or whatever the fuck and just making money on the table. And which I guess apparently, I think, like, one of Mitt Romney's relatives was on it. A bunch of other people's were on, like, there too. And it's just this thing, which, like, this is unsaid thing that, like, this is why they never made a thing of it, because there's so many fucking politicians who are in this kind of shit where it's like, they get in there and they realize, oh, like, I can get my cousin to be in this one thing and I can make him, he can get $700,000 a year or whatever. And it's like, you got to realize, like, I mean, they probably are kicking that back to some extent to their, you know, to their old pops or whatever, you know? So, yeah. Sorry, I'm rambling, but.
No, yeah. Good.
Yeah.
So, I had something, but I lost it. So what are you moving on then to the Biden win and the fraud accusation? What do you want to start off with that?
The Biden win. Oh, I forgot. I made that note. I mean, the fraud thing. Okay. I got to say, I really do hate how people made it out. There's this thing that no way that there's a fraud in the election. Because it's just like, I mean, I don't know. It's how you could believe that. I mean, every election has fraud to some extent. It's like to think otherwise is just to be naive. So it's a matter of to what extent. And if you don't believe that these people could be capable of that, I don't know what to tell you. There was also so much weird election hijinks that happened that was like, I do think it was to a very high degree. Now, is it to enough degree to make a difference in the election? I don't know. Scott Horton brings up a good point a lot of times that Trump kind of shot himself in the foot by being against mail-in voting. I mean, I understand initially being against it, but like once you, it's already a thing and it's happening, to continue to be against it instead of being like, hey, you guys need to go do this is dumb. Because yeah, especially if you take into account his base is generally older conservatives. And these are people who are kind of scared about the COVID stuff, rightfully so to some extent, because they are the target demographic that's going to be an issue for. So why would you not promote mail-in voting for them? Because it's like, especially once it's a given, it's happening anyways, no matter what you do. It'd be one thing if he had made some sort of power move to stop it beforehand, but he never did. And yeah,
I think he made a bad calculation because I think he thought he would be able to get rid of the mail-in ballots. I really think that's what it was. But I don't know. Okay, a couple thoughts. First thought is that I don't know how anyone could have faith in the legitimacy of a Democratic election again, ever. You know, it was such a tenuous thread for me, even when I wasn't an anarchist. But how could you after this? How could you?
Yeah, and the irony of it all was that fucking 4 years ago, these same people are saying that these things are like, these are completely up and up, were the ones who are complaining about fucking Russian ads and like, or right, Russian shit posters or whatever. And it's like, you're talking the most in like tiniest of infinitesimally small difference in election. Like, sure, maybe you could possibly make a case that made a few hundred, like a difference of a few hundred, maybe even a few thousand ballots. But to make the case that it like swayed the election is just fucking retarded. And there's no way about it, you know? And at least this one was grounded in some sort of reality, you know? Yeah.
Well, the goddamn gall of them to say, oh, a few Russian shit posters influenced the election, but Facebook showing election registration reminders to certain demographics isn't, you know, like how many people in this country you think, I would say 75 to 80% of people in this country have a Facebook account. Well, what if Facebook only reminded people of certain demographics who usually voted Democrat? What if they reminded them to register and vote on election day, but didn't remind conservatives? Something like that. Or what if Google delisted and only pulled up negative search results for Trump and only pulled up positive search results for Hillary Clinton? I think that is a huge, you know, interference.
Yeah, but to them, that's just the truth, you know, like it is what it is. But yeah, no, I do think it's fine too. Another point I want to hit on with the mail-in voting is it also lowered the bar of effort required to vote. And that's the one big thing as we like, a lot of people like to, I mean, from the left, it's like, oh, this is democracy and democracy is great. From the right, it's like, well, this isn't democracy, it's a constitutional republic, which is just democracy with extra steps. But I digress. It's still like, if we are going to have this system where we vote, I have always hated the argument that we need to make it accessible to everyone and easier for everyone, because it's like you are just making this, like you are just essentially lowering the quality of the individuals who vote in a sense. I mean, I guess you can make a case one way or the other, but it's still like, I don't know, making things more democratic doesn't make it better. I mean, especially that's easy for me and you to say, but even from a perspective of a, you know, a Republican, or even, I guess maybe we wouldn't be able to make this argument to a progressive or whatever, but to a conservative, it's like, this is not the way to go. Like making this easier for people to vote where it's like very little effort. It's not really, I mean, you're reducing the quality of the individuals who are participating in your system, you know?
So. More so than that. I mean, does it even really matter? So if there's only two shitty options, does it matter how many votes each one gets? The result is the same if you get 30 votes in one category and 31 votes in the other category. It's the same result if you get 3 million votes in one category and 3 million and one votes in, you know, the other option, right? So yeah. I guess I inartfully said, basically, like, you're going to get one, you're either going to get A or B. And is A better than B? I don't know. Does it matter if, you know, one, if A gets 35 votes and B gets 40 votes? It's the same result.
It's funny that you, I was just thinking about that. It's like, it reminded me as a kid, like, kind of like the impression I got of government and how romanticized it was. And it was like, you know, every vote counts. Right. You could be one vote that makes a difference. And like, think it sounds great and sounds beautiful, but then you really think about it and you're like, no, that's the fucking worst.
Right.
Like, you're telling me that one person with one shitty idea could make a huge difference in, like, to this extent. It's like, it's just so funny how they can twist things in their head. And like, yeah, I mean, it is this thing where you play on people's ego to make them like, you're special. But it's like, if you really think about it, you're like, yeah, but that could be anyone else. That could be some asshole that lives under a bridge that now just made it so your life is shit for the next 4 to 8 years, you know? Like,
it builds, I think it's because it's a participatory religion. Mm-hmm. In order to get people to believe, you have to get them to participate. You know, I'm a Christian myself. So don't take this the wrong way, but if you get someone to come to the service and to eat the bread and drink the wine, you know, they're going to feel much more connected to what's going on than if they sat outside and heard the organ playing, you know? So I think you got to get them to participate in it before they feel the magic.
Yeah, that's fair. Cause I mean, I grew up religious. I mean, I think I told you previously, maybe I didn't, maybe I did. I don't know. That I am an atheist, but I grew up super religious. And I do remember, like, being, and that was a large part of it for me, of like what made it, like, being part of it. And it's like, just, I don't know, almost like, it's like, ooh, like this, I don't know, this feeling of being involved in like the baptism and all these like rituals and stuff. But I mean, for me personally, it's just like, once I reevaluated it logically, none of it made sense to me. I mean,
yeah,
but you know, that's a whole other separate discussion.
Oh, but, yeah, we could do that, but. Rothbard, yeah. I mean, it's, sorry, I didn't mean to jump in, but Rothbard says, I mean, you have to make, democracy does this, is that it tricks people into thinking that the state is us.
Yes.
So anything that the state does to us is okay because we voted for it.
Yeah, no, it's true. That's a, and to back up a little bit, it's kind of a lot of why I mean, I've done episodes already on like being like kind of anti-politics in general and not thinking that's the route to go. Like, I would prefer people just don't vote at all.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, that's a big part of it. So let's start moving, shifting things. You said you had some things. I don't know if you had anything you wanted to bring up, any topics you wanted to bring up from 2020. I've kind of brought up all mine. And I have like one more thing, but that's kind of what I'm going to save for last. But I'll see if you had anything, because 2020, there's so much. Like, you brought up in the last episode the whole Soleimani thing, and I didn't even think of it, and that's fucking huge.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if you had anything, because I'm sure I've probably missed multiple fucking major things. So.
Well, shit, the ghost of Soleimani came back in the days leading up to January 6th. You remember that? They were like, some Iranian official threatened to fly a plane into the back of the Capitol building. Did you hear about this?
No, I didn't see that.
Yeah. Well, allegedly that's, was something that was floating around leading up to January 6th.
It's funny. No, I didn't see that.
Well, yeah. I got a lot of things. I mean, we could spend 15 or 20 minutes on each one. So, I mean, one, it would be the religion of trusting the science. We talked about religion now, but this was a big thing that came up. Just blindly trusting, oh, well, you know, trust the science, my science versus your science, trust the experts. I don't think this is anything new to 2020, but it really came out in 2020.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It was definitely nuts. And the funny thing is, this whole like trust the science thing is like, it's trust for my science. Yeah, it's like, it's funny. I think Vin Armani brought up some point one time. I don't remember who he was on with, but he brought this point that's like kind of this whole scientism thing appeals to midwits, But then on the other hand, the whole like being skeptical or like basically being on the other team of a sense of like essentially the team, I don't know what you'd call it, but team against trust of science were either really smart people or fucking idiots. And so this is like your generic, like, you know, I don't know, your generic normie or whatever, you know, like, I don't know how to say it, like your generic white trash or what have you would be the ones who are like, oh no, I don't believe any of that bullshit, but then have no factual anything to base it on of, or just generic Trump followers or whatever. But then you had other people who actually like thought critically and were like, no, this is stupid. Like, this is an actual science. Like, I mean, I remember before all this COVID stuff began, or actually right around that time, I think, who was it? Horton, I think, had some like, he didn't actually, he kind of after the fact, like not saying who it was, he was talking about how he had talked to somebody who was like a researcher or something, and it was like involved in the whole COVID stuff, and how they were saying, like, even at this time, they're spouting all these certainties from the trust science folks, and they were being like, no, we really don't know anything yet. And I mean, that's just, but the thing is, people don't realize that's how science works. Like, pretty much starting off, especially something like COVID, you don't fucking know a goddamn thing. Like, that's just how science works. And all this, like, oh, trust the science, trust the science. Like, there is not really any science yet. Like, the science right now is to be skeptical and wait for stats to come in. And right now you have no fucking stats. So, like, to even say the trust of science is just retarded in and of itself, you know? And it, I don't know. It's just frustrating, you know?
Well, you're right, because you said skepticism is something that's built into science. When we say science, what are we even talking about, right? These people don't remember high school biology. Is the science is not a monolith either. Science is a method. That's why it's called the scientific method. It's a method of thinking, and this comes off of repeated experiments the result of which you are replicable, and questioning those results and analyzing them, formulating, well, first you formulate a hypothesis, then you test it again to see if you get the same results, and then you repeatedly test that hypothesis until you break it, then you learn something. So it's,
yeah, like, that is another good point. That is another thing I've had thought about before. There's no such thing as the science is settled. Like, people who say the science is settled are people who don't know the fuck they're talking about. Because that's one big thing Thaddeus Russell's brought up multiple times in defense of like postmodernism and the whole idea of like, you know, questioning everything you know. Because like, think about centuries ago what was settled in science and like people thought they knew was objective reality, and like, and it's almost entirely bullshit now. And that's probably going to be the case hundreds of years from now as well, you know? So. Yeah.
Not only that, but you and I know that just because someone is a part of the government group doesn't make them able to do more things, or it doesn't make them esteemed. It doesn't make them especially qualified. It doesn't do anything like that. People think that scientists are some elite class, some godly demigod type class, that they don't have human motivations. They don't have human fallibility. They don't have human emotion. They don't have a connection to their work. Imagine if you're a scientist and you've devoted your entire career towards one hypothesis, and you're 65 years old, you're tenured, you've written books about this, you've toured all over the place, and all of a sudden someone comes up with a study that has conclusive evidence that your entire career was fucking wrong. What are you going to do? You're going to bury that person. That's what you're going to do. So it just doesn't. So to think that scientists don't have their own agenda or they don't have their own motivations is so naive from the trust the science people.
Especially government scientists.
Yeah.
That is the biggest thing, is so much of this was driven from like government scientists. Yeah. And even then, ones who aren't technically government scientists, which kind of plays into a lot of this, like, oh, this is a private company, bro, with like all this shit going on now with censorship. It's like, sort of, not really. Like, the same thing goes with science stuff. So much of that is funded by the fucking government. So it's like they have reasons to have certain positions. And like, I'm not even necessarily saying they're being intentionally dishonest, but there are so many times where certain things will unintentionally, and you don't even maybe not even purposely doing it, will change your perspective on things. For example, like I don't remember, but I've had multiple conversations about how long it took me to go from a minarchist to an anarchist. But it's because there's so much like propaganda and like years of being raised a certain way that kept me from being able to make that leap. And I feel like it's a lot of the same thing here, where it's like there's just little things will kind of just not even like you're not even doing it purposely. But it'll just make it so you just can't take that leap to like, oh, this, you know?
It really goes back and down to base assumptions, core values, first principles is what when you walk into it with one of the big core libertarian principles is that the government creates nothing. Everything the government has, it first has to take from someone else. When you accept that truism, then it frames your entire way of thinking about the government. And if you don't have that core assumption, if you don't have that core understanding, which I think is logically deducible, that it's a priori that the government has to take from someone else. It doesn't produce anything. Then it frames everything. Another thing about the experts is that, well, Am I gonna get that grant that my job depends on if I come up with a study that goes against the government's agenda? Is the government still gonna give me that grant? Or, you know, am I gonna get that promotion at this government institution? So Rothbard, again, he talks about that in The Anatomy of the State, the opinion molders, the class that is can't hack it in the private market, so they have to, for their own survival, be part of the government and live off that. Yeah. Yeah. The priest cast in the cathedral.
Yeah. Yeah. You have any other points before we move on to our last point?
I got so many, man.
Wait, how many like really good ones do you have? Because we'll an hour, and so I mean we'll keep going on like 20 plus minute tangents on each one. So
we will. Probably,
so let's do like one or two more, but it depends.
The other big theme is the massive red pilling. I don't know if we touched on this already, but not in the red pilling that we maybe would want with the black and yellow pill. But, I mean, people like my mom, she's a scapegoat for my conversations here. I think she listens to some of my stuff too, but, she's always been, so my grandpa was a John Bircher, you know, like a real right wing, libertarian conspiracy theorist. And, so she grew up reading Harry Brown because my grandpa would make her Freedom in an Unfree World, which is cool. Creature from Jekyll Island. But so she had that kernel of it, but she was a lot more into the duopoly kind of situation before this even. And I've noticed that from a bunch of people. I had a buddy. I saw him last weekend or the weekend before for the first time since high school. And when we were in high school and after that, he was a Bernie bro. And now after all this, he was defending Trump from, you know, in the January 6th situation and about how the election's all bullshit. And he's a Bernie, you know, was a Bernie bro. So I think a lot of minds were changed.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, especially with my friends, I guess I do the same thing where I like go off my family because my family is kind of like generic conservatives, like just milquetoast. Like, it's not even that they're like, I mean, I guess like semi neocon-ish, but not in like a evil way, just in a generic, like, that's just what they say in the news. So,
freedom. We love our troops. Our troops give us freedom.
Yeah. And it's not even that they really even necessarily have a hard opinion. It's just that it's just not something that really matters that much to them, which I completely get. Yeah. And even them, I just feel like your normal person, especially, I feel like the big thing in people's eyes got open to was the deep state, where like, that is a thing.
Yeah.
And it's just not tenable at all. Like, I don't know. That's probably the biggest thing I got is a deep state. And yeah, just in general that like, I mean, I had so many people that I feel like this year, like I seemed a whole lot less crazy too. But then, you know, like, cause I always just, I felt like for a while that I was just like, sometimes I just like doubted myself. And I'm like, maybe I'm just fucking crazy. Cause it's like just normal life. Like I'm just such a, I mean, not that I'm used to dealing with people who have different thoughts than me, but like just being such an outcast, and then it just was like, this is a complete turnaround where people are like coming to me to be like, hey, what do you think of this? And I'm like, whoa, like, because I was like the crazy one for the longest time, but I was just, you know, like, I don't know, like, it is what it is. Like, now they're looking at me like, hey man, what do you think about this? What do you think we should do? Like, and I'm like, I'm not used to you guys looking up to me like this. I'm used to being the crazy fucking one, you know?
The crazy one in the corner talking about, okay, at least I've dabbled in 9/11 truth, and but the real truth behind it is that, sorry, this is a tangent, shit. But the truth of it is that we got into foreign wars, and that was the catalyst event, whether it was planned or not, whatever. The truth of it is, anyways, but to be someone like that, trying to explain to these people all these different things, you look like Charlie from It's Always Sunny. I think its name is Charlie, where you know that meme where he has all the pictures on the wall and he's like drawing lines between it?
It's actually from Pacific Rim, that scene, but yes, I get what you mean. Yeah,
is it really?
Yeah, it's from Pacific Rim, yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah, but but it is Charlie from It's Always Sunny, but it's just that movie. But yeah, no, I know what you mean. It's like, like I said, I was kind of in that like period too when all this shit happened, where I was like kind of doubting myself, like maybe I am crazy because I'm such an outcast. And then it turned around. I was like, oh no, I've just been right this whole fucking time.
What year was that?
What, when I flipped? Oh, what are you talking about?
When you were feeling like an outcast.
Like 2019?
Yeah. I was going to say, I turned into an ANCAP in like 2015 or 16. And I got really into Peter Schiff. And for a couple of years, I was really like, the collapse is coming. It's going to be here. You know, like, we got to buy gold and silver. The Fed, you know, hyperinflation, it's coming. And I don't know. I think this brings me into another thing on my list, was deficits don't matter.
Yeah. No, yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but you know, that's kind of where I was at too. I was coming more from like an economic perspective, where I had been saying for a while, like, especially because like the big thing was like all the Trumpers, which I kind of told you, like the people I kind of interact with, especially like work and stuff, are more right leaning. And they were like, look at this great fucking economy. How wonderful it is. It's like, no, it's not.
That's something like Tim Pool would say. He still says that, oh, we had the greatest economy. And my parents were all like during that time, oh, you know, the economy's so great. Like our portfolio is doing well. So how could the economy be doing bad?
Yeah. And that's kind of where I was starting to feel like crazy, because everyone was like, the economy is so great, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, no, it's not. Like, it is going to crash. We are so scared to crash. And like, and I felt like I was like crazy, because I was, and I, even then I wasn't even really, like I said, I'm not the one to like make resolute declarations or to like, especially when it comes to like conspiracy stuff. But I was like, the fucking principles right now just do not add up. We are on the verge of a collapse. And then ironically, with every, the way it always works, with every collapse, there's some sort of reason. And obviously this time was COVID. And that was like, COVID was the perfect fucking like, oh, now we have a collapse. Oh, well, it was because of COVID.
Yeah.
You know, like. And but the funny thing is, I had so many people I had a lot of friends who saw through that, because I was like, had been saying there was going to be a collapse, especially I have so many friends involved in stocks. And I was like, yes, they're like, oh, well, it's because of COVID. I was like, was it really? Have I not been saying this for a while? And they're like, yeah. Like, and it like, was the collapse not a little bit before the COVID stuff really hit? Does this not seem fishy to you at all? I'm like, yeah.
Now we don't have to blame it on modern monetary theory anymore. We don't have to blame it on Fed inflationism and money printing or anything like that. It's COVID. COVID is the problem.
Yeah, and it was funny too, because the reason why I knew it was going to collapse is because I saw, I think it was actually some like Ron Paul like fucking articles or some shit, where they were showing like right, but this was before COVID, that they were dumping an insane amount of money into the stocks. And I was like, I know exactly what's happening. They're trying to dump money in the stocks right before the election. That way they can, you know, pass the buck a little bit until after election. And that way, because they know the collapse is coming. They know it. And like, but they want to make that collapse happen after the election, because a pre-election collapse completely fucks you. But yeah, and so anyways, we're getting a little into it, but you talk about deficits don't matter. I guess we just kind of touched on that anyways.
Yeah.
We?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Universal basic income test run was another thing that I came up with. And it seems like that's kind of as the collapse happens, I think it's gonna, they need to use it to usher in the next era. Their next era of planning is what, and I say they loosely, I think we've seen a test run of it with these stimulus packages. Maybe it's going to become more frequent and more money. The inflation has yet to hit yet. I've seen a little bit of it, but have you noticed, like, how much is a gallon of milk over there?
Honestly, I couldn't tell you off the top of my head.
Probably $3.50?
$4 or $5 maybe.
Really?
Talking to my ass. I don't know. My wife does the groceries, so.
Well, same here. I always thought the milk was 2.5 or something, 2.5 or 3.
I know I have noticed a little bit, but not a lot. Not as much as it should be.
Bread is expensive. $4 or $5 for a loaf.
Yeah, but I have there has been a lot of like random stuff that's gone up. But I have the UBI thing. Yeah, it's totally right. We have already gotten sneakily to the point where we're just waiting for the next one, waiting for the next one, waiting for the next one. And it's actually a smart way to do UBI because if anything, that makes us more subservient to them. I know me and you, I don't really care. I mean, like, I'm like, cool. I want them. Keep giving me stimulus. Keep giving me stimulus. But it's not, like, we had this conversation last time, but I'm more because I'm kind of like sort of collapsitarian now.
Yeah.
And I'm just keep giving me money, baby. I'm going to fucking, I don't know, whether, I mean, I'm going to get my situation right to prepare for your inevitable downfall.
Yeah.
So, like, you are shooting yourself in the foot. Like, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I bought a few guns. I bought ammo, reloading part components. I did this before when this all hit, but I bought some med kits. I bought, we have a food stockpile. I do need a water filter, like one of those mass water filters. But I've been buying crypto. That was my other thing, is that crypto becomes mainstream with Bitcoin hitting 20 and then 40,000 or 38 or however far it got. I've been dabbling this whole time in crypto, but I really have been getting into it.
It's for me. I mean, for your normies, I don't feel like it's a thing. For me and you, like, yeah, the more money the government's going to give me, the more I'm going to use it to prepare for when the government fucks up. Because I know that them giving out money is a signal of like, hey, this is not good.
Yeah.
So for me, it's like, yeah, I mean, going forward for me, I'm kind of at a spot where, I don't know, I'll probably like maybe pay off some debts, maybe get some more guns, maybe start debt. I haven't yet dabbled into crypto or like gold and silver and stuff, like precious metals, but I'm kind of there. I kind of wanted to get, like, I think we talked about it early last time, but for me, I'm more like, I want to have my physical goods, like whether it be gardening tools, just different stuff like that, guns, ammo, actual stuff I can physically use. Because like gold and silver and crypto are all great, but if they're on the off chance an actual collapse does happen, it's not going to be of much use until after the collapse. Because those are type goods that will be great when you're rebuilding after the collapse, but during the collapse, pretty goddamn useless.
I think a can of tuna would be worth a lot in gold, know? Or I really do think, though, is that crypto, and I'm not an expert on this, but I think cryptocurrency's mass adoption is it's inevitable. Whether or not you believe gold is, I'm a gold bug. I do believe that gold and silver is a better amount, a better money, but the government is going to adopt cryptocurrency. It's going to happen. There's going to be a world bank takeover, a world bank or a central bank takeover of cryptocurrencies. Institutional money is going to come into it. Now, whether that it goes into Fedcoin or some Frankenstein monster that they cook up, some kind of centralized cryptocurrency, it might go into that. But electronic money is the future. Cashless society. It's got to be.
Yeah, I agree. That's why I think, like, I mean, while I have said that I don't have any crypto yet, I do think getting in early and getting other forms of crypto that aren't going to be the whatever the Fed crypto is going to be is the way to go. So the early grain on the game is probably better. I mean, I say that take that with a grain of salt as someone who's not in the game yet. I just, that's not the important thing to me at the moment, but yeah, it's more a matter of priorities, but
yeah. Well, let me drop a little thing. Sorry to keep bringing things up, but
I was done.
I keep bringing things up when it's like, how much time? Anyways, I read this interesting article about how Tether is a big. Do you know what Tether is?
No, not really.
Okay, my very noob understanding of Tether is that some people have created a cryptocurrency where the value of it is pegged to the dollar. So when you go on exchanges, you buy things, you know, you pay this company your dollars and they give you a Tether coin, which is a cryptocurrency, and you can use the Tether coin to buy any other cryptocurrency. So I think it eliminates the exchange fee you would get if you bought US dollars to Bitcoin and then use Bitcoin to buy another cryptocurrency, because there's exchange fees every time you do that. The idea that most money flowing into crypto markets are Tether coins, and that Tether coin is a huge Ponzi scheme because the company that runs Tether coin doesn't actually have enough dollars to back up the Tether coins that they're issuing. So, I mean, you could argue it's just like any bank in the United States.
Is that
yeah. Yeah. It's a fractional reserve. So, I don't know. It was interesting to me. Some people are saying that Tether is going to collapse and that will rock the crypto markets.
But I know that's too deep crypto for me to know. Like,
I'm sorry.
I've worn on my sleeve big time that I'm not a tech guy. That's actually one of the biggest things that kind of kept me getting into like this scene, is like the not being a tech dude. And on top of that, like I feel like I've said many times for people listening, if you feel like you have something important to say, or even if you don't, if you just want to talk to people or whatever, fucking do it. And yeah. I don't think I've had anyone yet turn me down for an interview. Like I've had like one or two people have been a little bit difficult for scheduling. Pretty much the vast majority of people all said yes immediately and were completely super open with scheduling as well. So like, that's the one thing that people that have this impression of, like, I guess it's like we were talking beforehand how my kids know I'm like podcast now and like think I'm like famous. And it's kind of like, while I joke and laugh about that, it's kind of same thing that we had, like at least me had with some of these people that I've talked to already, that I'm like, oh, they're kind of like famous. And it's like, right. I mean, like, to me kind of, but like when I'm like, hey man, what's up? You want to do a podcast? I'm like, yeah, what's up? Whenever. And I'm like, how about this day? You're like, yep, sure. And you're like, holy shit, was that easy? Like, yeah. We know this is a little bit of a side, but I try to bring that up when I can, because I do think it's important to let people know, like, hey, fucking, if this is, like, I don't know, I just, for me, I guess coming out of nowhere and talking to all these people that I've kind of respected and stuff, it is kind of like a important message to put out, I think. But
oh yeah, yeah. You're only limited by the size of your cojones.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, I haven't had any like huge people, like, and even then it's probably just because I haven't even approached them. For like, for example, like Tom Woods and Dave Smith are probably the two biggest ones I haven't even approached yet. But it's like, I don't know, maybe I could. I don't know.
It doesn't hurt to try.
Yeah, I guess I'm just gonna be a pussy. Also, I'd also kind of don't really even know what I would want to talk to them about yet. So I also don't want to come to them and be like, I don't know what I want to talk to you about.
Yeah.
Like, I want to have a bright topic ready.
Well, the worst thing that could happen is they could say no, or they could just never answer.
Yeah. Like, who the fuck are you?
Right.
Yeah. But all right, I think it's probably a good spot to move on to the last topic. I kind of wanted to finish this out with what are you expecting for 2021? I mean, we're kind of cheating a little bit because we're already in 2021 and we've got a little bit of a taste, and it's interesting for sure.
Well, in a lot of ways, I think it depends on what happens tomorrow, which will be interesting for our listeners, at least my listeners, because I won't release this until maybe Friday or Saturday, but you'll already know what happens. But I don't know. I'm black-pilled again. There's a side. It's a black and white pill. So basically, I think things are going to get really bad in terms of the regime. I don't know what, if it's going to be the entire government, the entire federal government will be controlled by Democrats. So I don't know what kind of crazy legislation they're going to pass. Biden has been talking about mask mandates. Germany, this is an aside, but Germany has threatened to open concentration camps for people who do not obey the lockdowns. And this is not getting any kind of like, wait a second, wait a second here. Haven't we heard this story before?
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think things are going to get really, really bad. I'm talking, you know, severe lockdowns here for a period of time, federal mask mandates, more spending, lots more spending, huge spending, universal basic income kind of things, gun control if there's a false flag, there will be a gun grab. If there's a false flag tomorrow or some kind of a situation where 2A types try and kick off a boog, or there's a false flag about it, the white pill is that we, this all is what we make it. This is all going to vary. Our timeline has been so accelerated now that people are really reaching out for practical solutions. I've been in the Wisconsin Freedom Cell group for 3 or 4 days. And in these 3 or 4 days, 15 people have joined the group on Telegram. And it's going to force us to create these alternatives in our real lives and be agorists. And there's these exciting alternatives that are viable right now on the internet. And it's like the Wild West, man. And I'm going to continue with the show. You're going to continue with the show. More people are going to join the conversation. And I think that's something to be excited about.
Yeah, I like that. I'll probably start stealing the black and white pill because I feel like I've been I've been going on about that, and it's kind of like I think we even talked about the last one how I kind of think it's going to be a mixed bag, and I think that going forward we're going to have like more it's going to have this appearance of the empires cracking down, but it's going to be more of the cracking down in more centralized locations, and so it's going to be like, you know, more urban areas are going to be like far more statist and the rurals are not. So it is like, and then on top of that, I kind of went into before how like starting out as black pilled and then white pilled, you know, and some, but yeah, no, that's a really good way. I think, I know boiling it down to black and white is kind of like, you know, I mean, I guess that makes sense. Black and white.
It's the libertarian thing to do.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't necessarily work because it is like, I'm black in some spots, white in others, but yeah, no, I do think, yeah, that's interesting. I might steal that, but going forward, I'm definitely, it's going to be fucking interesting. I mean, I guess I'm a little more skeptical of that it's going to be as bad as everyone thinks. I do think they're going to try to crack down. I don't know. I mean, I'm hesitant to make any resolute, like, this is going to happen, this isn't. I don't know if they're, especially when it comes to gun control, if they're going to make too much. I wouldn't be surprised if they make a little bit of little bit of movement towards that way, because I do think this past year has shown that we don't have as much teeth as we make it out to be, especially the 2A community or whatever the fuck, you know? So, because, I mean, it's like this, we kind of gave all this ground on COVID. And so now it's like, you know, we're going to make this like, I don't think they're going to do like, you know, door to door. I still don't think we're there. But, you know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, fucking Trump did bump stocks and shit, which, I mean, isn't that big of a deal. But I could totally see him doing more stuff like that and just being like, okay. And like, it's more of this just acceptance thing. But with that, I do think it's kind of the same idea as the more they crack down, the more they fucking push back. I saw this quote on Float today, and I don't remember. I think it was they were talking about taxes, but I think it just applies to government action in general. And it's like the harder the government cracks down, the more it pushes down the blade against its wrist. And I thought that was really, really fucking cool. And I kind of like, you know, like kind of goes into how we were talking about how like, you know, now we have alternate shit going on. Because, I mean, a lot of people don't realize that modern day government right now is straight up fascism. Like, just straight up, like, people, I mean, before, like, probably a year or two ago, I might be like, oh, it's kind of fascism. No, it's straight up. Like, right now, we have a perfect merger of government and corporate. Whether you see it or not, it's there. I mean, it just is. You know, like, you look at all the censorship going on. Like, I've seen people on Facebook getting removed. Like, I think it was Eric July got removed, and it said straight up on his thing, oh, we've prevented you from fucking being able to post in preparation for inauguration day or something like that. And it was like, what the fuck? Like, why do you give a shit about that? Like, yeah. Like, I mean, they're not even trying anymore. Like it's just there. Like, this is straight up fascism. And it's like, people don't realize fascism isn't just that, which I don't like. Like, it has an actual definition. It's a merger of fucking corporate and state. And that's what it is. And it's actually kind of ironic. I'm actually zucked right now as well. And literally the quote I got zucked for was a Mussolini quote that said something along the lines of, fascism would be more accurate to call it corporatism as it's a merger between the corporate and state. And that's what they fucking zucked me for. The wow. Most ironic thing they could possibly zuck me for.
That's insane.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's just, I don't have any like strong predictions of 2021. I'm very white-pilled in a sense, but black-pilled in others.
Yeah.
It's going to be very interesting going forward. I don't know. I guess I'd say more white pill than not, because I do think this is going to be an interesting time going forward. And I do think there is something to the more that they push down, the more they shoot themselves in the foot. So it's not to say there won't be bad parts, but
to that end, I do think that 2021 might be the year where regular people have had enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially that's kind of what I went to earlier. Now they've shown the Trumpers that, hey, you know, the shit that you've had issues with and why you got Trump in? Well, our system that we've set up for you to be able to deal with these issues, supposedly, doesn't work. So mm-hmm. what now? And I think that's a interesting thing going forward, how that's going to work.
Yep.
Yeah. And then maybe even on the other side, once fucking Biden's out of there, it's like maybe the lefties will realize, because what lefty really wanted Biden in? They just didn't want Trump in. Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I still don't think it's going to be as much of a red pill moment for them, but a little bit, you know? So with that, you want to go ahead and drop your plugs, all that good shit?
Yeah, I got a lot. Well, basically, you can find everything at libertyweekly.net. I got a lot of stuff. You can find me on Float, MeWe, Minds, BitChute, Library. Library is my preferred place, actually. LBRY.TV. And I think at libertyweekly.net/LBRY is there too. So if you like my work, if you want to support it, go to libertyweekly.net/support. You can find crypto addresses there, Patreon, Subscribestar, all that good stuff. But I'm glad that we've been able to connect, Jose. And why don't you, I'll drop this in my feed too, so you should plug your content as well.
Yeah. This will be on the No Way Jose YouTube channel. I also have the audio podcast, which is pretty much everywhere audio podcasts are at. This will all be in the video description. So if you want to look in here, you'll see a video description. This pretty much is all the links to every spot my audio pods are at, but it's pretty much everywhere. You can type in the search bar, look for me. I also, make sure to go out and give me a good rating on Apple if you can. Most of my content is also on the Liberty Movement YouTube channel. Not all of it though. Pretty much anything that's political-ish is going to be here. It's going to be on my No Way Jose channel. With the Liberty Movement channel, it's also on BitChute. So go check that out. All this is in the video description. Like I said, like, share, subscribe, comment, all that good shit. And with that, deuces, you stick around, Patrick. I want to talk to you after. So, yeah. See you, everybody.